Hi, this is Rob McCollum, one of the producers of 1865. Welcome to Inside the Episode, episode 11 of 1865. Joining me as always, Stephen Walters and Eric Archilla.
Howdy, howdy.
The writers of the piece. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
So you know, it's been a while. We recorded a lot of these Inside the Episodes a while back, and now we are re-meeting and talking about them again now that it is out and online and available for people to hear. So that is very exciting.
Today for the first time.
So this was the actual debut day of the entire series. So you guys are starting to get feedback now from people who are listening to it and seem to be as excited about it as I have been for a very long time. So it's really great to know that this is out there and a thing that people are receiving and responding to. But we've got to jump ahead now because those people are just listening to episodes 1 and 2. But we are in episode 11 where Mary Surratt has hung and there are consequences. And we are learning about those in this episode.
Yeah, and the death of Mary Surratt is one of the more controversial aspects of the real history of the story of Edwin Stanton. In the culmination of the tribunal, she's executed. She's the first woman executed in United States history, and under some dubious circumstances, because not everyone in the country agrees with Edwin Stanton's belief that she should be put to death and that her crimes are deserving of that. Eric, do you have anything to add to this idea about, let me ask you, was Mary innocent or was she guilty in your opinion?
You and I have grappled on that a lot. She was definitely guilty. Question is, was she guilty of receiving, or to the point of receiving the death penalty?
Yeah, how far in on it was she?
There were a lot of other conspirators that were a whole lot more involved than she was. Sam Arnold and
Michael O'Loughlin,
they were both involved in the kidnapping plot, and there were some that said O'Loughlin was there waiting to kill Stanton that night, and those people were whisked away off to Dry Tortuga and given life in jail, which didn't last very long for them. Samuel Mudd was whisked away, and then, you know, we have Mary who was hung, so you just have to ask yourself, was what she did in her complicity worthy of hanging when the others were only
right
life?
It's like, did the punishment fit the crime?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I think honest historians probably would not disagree with the fact that she was guilty. I think they might disagree with her punishment in the end. I have another question. Can I ask questions?
Ask away.
Well, my question is, Eric, because you and I have talked a lot.
I really had kind of hoped you guys would have worked this out before you wrote the series, but that's fine. Let's work it out now.
Let's do it. Let's hash it out. No, my question for you is, which is, of course, we've talked about this extensively, but is it true that Edwin Stanton withheld the clemency request from President Johnson?
Well, there's, again, a lot of debate, and we're filtering history through people's opinions that either hated him or loved him. The Johnson side says that they never received the clemency request, and if he had seen it, he would have followed it and not hung Mary. The
right.
Stanton side says, oh, we gave it to you. It was in the giant stack of papers we handed you. And then people rebut that with saying, well, they stuck it purposefully at the very bottom of the stack, kind of mixed in there where Johnson wouldn't see it.
But isn't that, to play devil's advocate, isn't that historical perspective belied by the fact that Johnson did in fact have the ability to save her life when he received the writ of habeas corpus from Mary Surratt's attorney and yet chose not to try her again in a public trial?
Which brought us to, why would he not want it in a public trial?
Right. Well, I suppose you could take the point of view that Johnson had to do if you think of this in terms of political optics, he had to do what he did, because if he countermanded what the military tribunal, the conclusion that they had arrived at, then that would make him look like something of a hypocrite, because he himself gave Stanton the ability to declare martial law and to try Booth's conspirators in the tribunal. So to countermand their viewpoint on it might have made him look suspect.
So in some ways he was painted into a corner politically, and maybe, you know, as you postulate in this story, by some specific and direct and intentional maneuverings by Stanton to paint him into that corner.
Yeah, in the previous episode, Stanton orders Ella Starr to the arsenal and adds her to the witness list of the prosecution of Lewis Payne Powell, which, of course, it seems pretty obvious to me, at least in my reading of the history, Ella Starr wouldn't have even known who Lewis Powell was. And that was sort of, Eric and I thought, well, why did he do that?
And called to witness for the one person that absolutely was not making any effort to defend himself.
Yeah. So we sort of, you know, our extrapolation there was that, okay, well, this is about something else. This was a threat.
Well, let's talk about how that then played out in episode 12. So clearly Stanton has lost all of his cards. He has very little power left. He has been relegated. Talk about some of the fallout with Johnson.
Yeah, this is sort of Stanton for in our telling and painting of him. It's kind of his dark night of the soul moment. You know, it's he's lost. And I think as much as he wanted justice and as convicted as he was that Mary Surratt deserved the justice that she received, you know, I think that it came at a great cost for him. And I think that now, in the aftermath of her death, his back is against the wall, and I think he feels defeated.
And he did prove his case against the four conspirators and obviously had them hung, but he failed to prove his case against the South, failed to really draw a direct line to Jefferson Davis. And in the end, Jefferson Davis gets pardoned.
And it's also true that Stanton felt that the decision he made about Mary Surratt haunted him for the rest of his life. I believe there's a line where he says, "Every day I see that woman's face staring back at me, and I fear that she'll haunt me for the rest of my days." That's actually a thing.
That was actually from a letter, yeah, that he sent to a friend.
So in our version of this story, it is Langston that comes to him, that finds him when he is at home and powerless and kind of moping, if you were, you know, licking his wounds and kind of have given up. And I feel like that's a fictional
it is
construct
100%.
But we have such a great character, and we should talk about it. We haven't talked about the fact that that's
William Jackson Harper.
That is William Jackson Harper, for any of you fans of The Good Place,
who is an incredible actor, both on stage and on film.
And is a Dallas guy.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I actually
saw Will in a play at a now defunct theater called Plano Repertory Theater years and years ago. I think I want to say it was 15 years ago, in a play called R&J, which was a modern retelling of the story of Romeo and Juliet with an all-male cast. And Will played the Mercutio track. And I remember seeing him in that production and thinking, wow, that's one of the best actors I've ever seen live and in person. We became friends and stayed friends throughout the years. And of course, Will does a masterful job as John Mercer Langston.
So Langston comes and gives this powerful speech about what is happening to the freedmen across the South, and the consequences. Like, who are you, Stanton, in your nice house to feel bad for yourself right now? These people are dying. Do something about it.
Yeah, I think of that moment as the moment that Langston sort of, you know, through a modern lens, Langston confronts Stanton with his own privilege in a way. It's right. As bad as it may seem to you in your place of privilege, think about how awful it is for those less fortunate than you. And the message works. And so Stanton and Langston work together along with John Bingham, played masterfully by Mr. Rob McCollum.
Oh, I thank you.
And they work together to subvert the will of President Johnson. And inside of this decision is really where we get into the constitutional crisis of the 1860s, where you have on one hand, you have Congress passing laws, and you have on the other hand, Johnson refusing to enforce those laws. And that, of course, culminates in what happens in the next episode, which is teased at the very end of this episode, which is that Bingham and Stanton and the United States Congress proceed to lay an impeachment trap for the president.
Yeah, so this is the idea that, like, we're going to tell the president he can't do something, and then we know he's absolutely going to go ahead and do that, and that's going to be the trap. And it's interesting because Wells is warning Johnson the whole time, like, this is a trap. They are still out to get you. This is not done. So interesting. Definitely stay tuned and keep listening, because I think you're going to be really interested to see how all that plays out. Another device or an element that we have in this one that we haven't had as much as there's kind of a rapid fire back and forth with the telegraphs of the day talking about the events that begin to happen. Because part of it is just because things were happening really fast. Also, we needed to cover a lot of ground in our story. And I really like the way that you guys came up with to get through this. I think that is one of the most exciting scenes, with Langston reading telegraphs and reading statements from Congress, and Bingham reading statements from Congress, and Johnson reading the responses, and it just really, really moves.
Well, and this, I think that this sequence in the podcast earlier in one of these inside the episodes, we talked about, well, what are the disadvantages or the pros and cons of writing for radio? Well, this is one of the advantages, because we're able to span basically 3 years and cover some of the major historical events that occur during that time from the perspective of our characters, keep their intention alive and their goals and purposes, keep those balls in the air at the same time. I mean, if you were to play that out in a TV show, it would not work. I mean, you know, if you were just to have this sort of like montage where there are people at like a telegraph,
yes,
like, you know, sending messages as time rolls on.
It would just be images of the telegraph tapping away, like yeah. three or four of them in sepia tone, and yeah. then dates flying by.
Yes.
It is important for the listeners. You guys need to keep up with that. Like the dates fly by on that section, but we are now doing a fairly considerable jump forward in time.
Yeah, we jumped from 1865 to 1868.
So we're not going to retitle the last two episodes the last two episodes of the series to a different date, but we have now moved ahead. We are now the events of 1868, and I have to say this is moving into a territory of history that I knew absolutely nothing about. I was not aware of these events. I was not aware of an impeachment. And I did not know that there was a historical precedent.
Right. Well, and Johnson was the first. And I mean, if it sounds like we're making this up, let me just sort of rehash what it is. Basically, Andrew Johnson is impeached for firing the head of his military apparatus, which sounds like something that is ripped right out of the headlines today. There is a lot of curiosity manifested, if you will, about whether or not our current president's decision to fire James Comey might result in the very same thing. Of course, these circumstances are a little different, but certainly it's very interesting.
I think the other thing that really jumped out at me in researching was the, first of all, we were talking about the two opposing forces of Johnson and Stanton being bound by this military tribunal. They both from their own perspective, agree that they can't interfere with it, and we see it obviously play out through the tribunal and what happens with Mary hanging. But we see the very clear ramifications of that, of what happened in the South, with both the story of the young boy having his arm shot off, which is actually pulled directly from the Freedmen Bureau files, because they're documenting all of these letters from the Freedmen's Bureau, from the Freedmen officers that were on the ground, of all of these horrific things that were happening down South.
Yes.
People that were being shot or killed just for looking at a white person the wrong way. Because of the direct consequences of Stanton not proving his case against the South, it has left an entire 4 million people down South fending for themselves in a basically a wolf's den of people that want to give them absolutely no rights, no protections, and horrible things are happening to the freed slaves down South.
And of course, you know, the other way to couch the statement that you just made is that because of the systemic bigotry inside of the country at that time, embodied by Andrew Johnson, his policies and his willful disregard for the laws of Congress, there are 4 million people who suffer down South. And Edwin Stanton then takes it upon himself to take the fight to the next level.
And one of the events that really launched all of that forward was the New Orleans riots of 1866. A group of people gathered to talk about the Constitution. They were having a constitutional convention, and in the streets, celebrating the constitutional progress that they're having, and a posse rides up of deputized officials, and with the 200 people that are gathered in the street, they just mow them down.
Slaughter them.
34 African Americans dead, 3 white abolitionists that were gathered there. And one of the things that we see play out a little bit is that there was zero prosecution of that event.
There's no consequence to that.
No consequence, which is representative of what was happening all over the South.
Yeah, the leadership of the Confederate Army didn't go away when the war ended. Those who had the means went back to their businesses, plantations and the like. Of course, they under slightly different circumstances, but a lot of them went into politics. A lot of them held offices in municipalities at the state level and even in Congress.
And a lot of officers, yeah, walked directly back into Congress, which they had just treasonously gone to war with, and now they're walking back in and making policy.
And on the mantle of states' rights, which was the very thing that they believe they fought the war for, states' rights to
right.
do what? To own slaves, to own human beings. Under that same mantle of states' rights, they wage a war against equality.
So Stanton, while defeated, is motivated by, you know, the reality check that Langston gives him. And it's also for us, the audience, realizing what's happening, how bad it is at this time, says, okay, we're going to elevate. It's almost like we're going to the nuclear option.
Game on.
Yeah. And I'm back in this game. I'm not going to sit at home and feel sorry for myself. I'm going to pick up my pen and make it into a sword. And the trap now is laid. And we're going to find out how that all plays out in episode 12 of 1865. Steve, Eric, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to support this kind of storytelling and ensure that we can continue to tell more stories like it, please support us at patreon.com/1865. Members there get advanced access to episodes, bonus features, and a free copy of the soundtrack album. That's patreon.com/1865. I'm Rob McCollum. Thanks for listening to 1865 Inside the Episode.